What affects 10 million people over 50 years old every year and costs $3 trillion? Everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, host of Mind Talk. Welcome to Transitions Tuesday. You know, we all experience transitions in our lives, and today we're going to learn about another. My guest today is Jane Wolfe Waterman, and Jane wears many hats. She is the author of, oh my God, We're Parenting Our Parents, How to Transform This Remarkable Challenge into a Journey of Love. In addition to being an author, Jane is an attorney, a psychotherapist, a family care coach, and the founder of Parenting Our Parents, which we will hear more about during the program. Jane, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here with you and your audience. Well, and I'd love to add that perhaps my best credential for this particular program is that I was a daughter and cared for my own parents for 10 years. So that adds to my qualifications.
Indeed it does. Now, as you heard me say a moment ago, the title of your book is Oh My God, We're Parenting Our Parents. You also heard me say that 10 million people per year at a cost of $3 trillion are actually impacted upon by, and I didn't say what it was, but in fact, what it is refers to is the caregiving experience. So how is it that an estimated $3 trillion in wages, pensions, retirement funds, and benefits are actually being lost by these multitudes of folks over 50 who are taking care of their relatives? What's going on? Why is this happening?
Well, it's a very good question, and there are so many statistics about the boom and the boomer age and what those of us who are in this generation, and I am one of them, are adding to the numbers and overwhelm of our country. But I think that if we go a little bit higher to the air view and look down on what's going on, where we get a very different perspective than eyeballing it, there are gains and losses. And sometimes we measure riches only in money, but I think there are far bigger riches. And so there's a great loss of income when people have to take time off work if they're taking care of their parents or paying for other people to do that. And many, many elders eventually do need care in their homes or care wherever they are. So there's definitely a huge expense. And the numbers may be even larger than you think. We're estimating 1 in 4 American families is involved in this. But there's also a huge gain, and that's part of my message, is that parenting our parents really is not only about caregiving. That's a really small and important piece of it. But it's really about a stage of life, and it's the last stage in the life cycle where we get to give back to those who gave to us. So that if we begin now to think about, as our parents age and become more dependent, maybe initially needing a little help with a bank statement or wishing accompaniment to a doctor, that may be the beginning of what I call pop parenting, or parenting our parents. But it goes through until they're no longer sometimes able to care for themselves, as with people in advanced stages of Alzheimer's, and we really do have to fully care for them. So that is something I call the pop cycle, stage of life. And if we begin to think of it like we think of parenting children, as a choice and as a stage of life, we begin to look less at it as a set of sacrifices and losses, and more as how it might be enriching everybody involved, the parents who who are seniors, the pop parents caring for them, the younger generations watching, and how are they going to take care of their parents as their parents now begin to age. So I see it in a bigger context, but certainly the numbers you mentioned are very frightening, and people feel very alone out there. And part of why we're operating Parenting Our Parents is to let people know there's hope and there's help.
Well, you know, the numbers are frightening, and you've raised a couple of important issues that I'd like to explore a bit more. Also, let me just ask you to speak a little bit more loudly.
Thank you. Appreciate the cue.
And let me say that, you know, there are some people, you're saying that it's a choice, and indeed it is a choice, but there are many people who see parenting, whether it's from a religious perspective, a cultural perspective, I mean, you know, there are numbers of ways in which people think about caring for their parents, but they see it as an obligation. And you're saying that if you can see it as a choice, that it sort of puts you in a better place. But what if they don't see it as a choice? Are there some things to think about in order to help those folks sort of shift how they're thinking about the commitment that they're making?
Yes. Well, I would say the first category of people who may feel very obliged and unhappy about this situation are people who themselves were abused or neglected by their own parents and have never been in a situation where they resolve that.
Absolutely.
Okay, and that's a very important group of people statistically in our country, and those people are to be respected. And I urge anybody who's going to take on parenting of anybody else, whether it's children or adults, to really do some work on themselves, go to a minister, go to a group, find a therapist who can work with you so that you're not carrying around resentments, because trying to parent anybody when you're annoyed that you have to go pick them up or you don't really want to hear the information or you find yourself overwhelmingly impatient most of the time because you're really grappling with issues that occurred long ago and were never resolved. So for that group of people, I would urge them to do whatever they need to do to look at the fact that they're still upset, mm-hmm. and that if they wish to do something like parent their parents, if they're even being sort of dragged into it by siblings, they really are best off trying to look at how to fix things inside their own selves in order to really do the job well for all concerned. Now, the second group, if I may go on, I don't want to monopolize this, but another group is generally people who feel culturally bound.
Yes.
There are a number of, you know, the wonderful thing about our country is we have all these diverse groups of people. And in many cultures, it's expected the oldest daughter or the eldest son or whatever the situation will move into the home. Or in some cultures, it's considered almost a shame to put your parents in a place
exactly
where they could get far better care than you can give them.
Exactly.
So what I urge about these group of people, and it really is a way all of us, is to take on a mature question with yourself. What kind of person do you want to be, and what can you manage that you really can carry through on, and what is it you want to do? Nobody really can work successfully at a 40-hour-a-week job, raise three kids by themselves, try to get a college education, care for aging parents at home, and have a life.
Right.
I mean, that's just really, one has to discover what other resources perhaps are available, what other relatives, what other church-related things, what other nonprofits, are you a veteran? There are a great many resources available where perhaps one can figure out how to be the person you want to be in your own culture, but the person who's right to be in 2015 in your own family.
Mm.
And that's a really tough situation, Pamela.
It can be, yeah.
you're in this field. You know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. And you mentioned another really critical player or group of players in this whole issue, and that's the siblings. Because, as you know, invariably there's one who takes on the role, and there's at least one who is the critic. There may be another one who takes on, I mean, talk about siblings and how that interaction can happen in a healthy way.
Yeah, that's a really important point, because what we're talking about is family values, family issues. And in my view of hope, the possibility that parenting older parents can revive people coming together in a family way and actually doing the kinds of things family used to like to do together. Some families like to fish. Some like to have big reunion events with many generations. Some people like to sit around the piano and sing songs. And we can do those things once we have plans in place that look ahead and once we start talking to each other. So what siblings need to do with each other is to recognize that they are the next generation of elders. And they have, if they wish, again, this is my view, if they choose to do this kind of job of being part of a POP family, then people need to sit down and talk to each other, sibling to sibling, to appreciate that perhaps just as there may be unresolved issues with parents about abuse or neglect or resentments, there may be unresolved issues often with siblings, rivalries, all kinds of things. And the roles that people take on that you were mentioning, the critic and the one who does it all efficiently, often parallel the roles that people had in early childhood.
Indeed.
And, you know, maybe again in 2015 people want to reexamine that. Maybe there's someone who used to play a back role who's now a financial expert and can sit down with the family and evaluate what are our financial resources, how do we want to share them, how do we want to spend them, and how do we want to have them after our parents are gone? How do we want to be with each other? And that's one of the most important reasons for siblings to get on and to plan together with their parents, not only because it's a really wonderful experience to reunite with your family and do the things that were fun, but because having practiced law for over 20 years, I can tell you that the other end of not doing that are long, expensive, horrible lawsuits. So there's so many reasons why people can begin to talk, and it's the conversations, the opening ones. As a therapist, I'm sure you find this with your patients, and I'm imagining your audience also feels, this is great, but how do I get started?
Well, and you know, the way in which you have sort of framed a perspective for the siblings, I think is really important, and maybe that's a place at the beginning of this path to begin, because you referred to them as the next generation of elders. And I think that if we recognize that we're going to be in this place in a minute or maybe an hour, but we're going to get there, it helps to shift your perspective about what's reasonable to expect and to do. But you're right in that as you do that work as the siblings, where does one start? You've been talking about POP parenting. Perhaps this is a really good time to talk about what POP parenting is.
Yes, I'd love to. And I want to spend a minute, looking at the fact that compared to parenting our children, if we're now sort of seeing those two parallels and looking at what is POP parenting, we're going about this parenting our parents without books, courses, and magazines, of which there are so many on the stand online and other places that have advice. There are very, very, very few resources. There is no Pop Parenting magazine. I would love somebody out in your audience to begin to think about creating one. There are no courses for people who'd like to do this and find themselves perhaps getting a little impatient themselves, maybe a little on the abusive side with their own parents. Parenting our parents will last often longer than the 18 years. Frightening that they seem.
Yeah,
we parent our children because, you know, if your parents start needing a little bit of help at 60 or 65, they may well live to 85, 90, 95. We may be talking 35, 40 years. Many of us live at a distance.
That's true.
Long distances. Some of us live at a shorter distance. There is no village out there, which is part of what Pop Parenting is beginning to create, is a village of people doing this who talk to each other. We have a community at our website, popparentingourparents.org. Everybody can go on there, join, be part of interactive communications, be a part of information, be a part of resources, share their upside, their family photos, and begin to create that you're not alone doing this. This is, in fact, a huge movement of people.
Which is so critical. And Jane, as you mentioned that if you're parenting your child, it may, you know, in theory, it's kind of done at 18 years. For your parents, it might be longer than that. I'm thinking, you know, there are some people who are gasping at the potential of that. So let's take a tiny break and we will come back.
Yes, a good idea.
And we will continue our conversation. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk and you're listening to Transitions Tuesday right here on Mind Talk. Jane Wolfe Waterman is the author of Oh My God, We're Parenting Our Parents. The inflection is one that I add. And Jane, just before the break, we were talking about Pop Parenting. So let's pick up with there. What is, I know you have a website and it's free, I believe. So let's just spend a little bit more time talking about all the options there.
Well, one of the things that generated this whole community was my sense of being alone. I ultimately told the story of my 10 years of caring for my own parents as a memoir and a self-help book to tell people how they could perhaps go through the stages as I had. And so it all began, as things often do, with me, and I went home, so to speak, to New York City, where my parents lived one Christmas to visit, and what I found in front of me just horrified me. They had been hiding from me how sick they were, and I realized that I had managed to be in the state many people are in denial. And I think your audience may be a little shaken up by that word. But in a very bizarre kind of way, even as well-informed as I was, I did not want to see what was in front of me. I was an only child. I lived 3,000 miles away from these dear folks, Jack and Lillian, whom I loved deeply, who had done a great job raising me. And I didn't want to see that there was a job for me to do ahead of them. Ahead of me for them. But I immediately jumped into action and wished that I'd had this book, so I ended up writing it. Oh my God, We're Parenting Our Parents, and it is exactly how I felt. But over the 10 years, it became how to transform this remarkable challenge into a journey of love. Because I think, Pamela, that parenting our parents is not just a stage of life, it's a spiritual journey. For everybody who involves themselves, they grow as people, as human beings, and as part of a community, a family, their own, and the bigger family of the village and of mankind. And
Jane, let me ask you this. Forgive me for interrupting, but I want to go back to what you described as seeing when you first went in to visit your parents, and you said that, in fact, they were much more ill than they had let on to you.
Yes.
Is that common?
Very common. And every time there's a big holiday where people are likely to go visit their parents, Easter, Thanksgiving, Christmas time, Grandparents' Day, which is today that we're recording this, not the Tuesday, but September 13th is annual National Grandparents' Day. Whenever people may be inclined to be with their aging parents and grandparents, that is a time to look around and check things out, because even I didn't want to see that they had hidden from me, as people may be hiding from you. You have them on the phone. They say, oh, everything's all right, honey.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't all right. People were sick. There was dust layers thick. My parents each had pneumonia. My mother had gone into a delirious state with it, wasn't getting enough oxygen. These people needed to be cared for, and I was having no idea, because they were saying at the other end of the telephone, we're all right, honey.
And why do you think, you're saying that that's very common, why do you think that's so common?
Well, I think at the other end, elder, senior parents are scared that if they let their children know, that's the end of their freedom, their independence. You know, the gig is up of being an adult. They don't see that they could be part of a very, very helpful team of people. And that's what we do at Pop Parenting also. We have a coaching program, intergenerational, where everybody who's available to be involved can make decisions, can sit down and have those conversations, not just siblings in the Pop Parenting generation, but people of all generations. And they can begin to say to the older folks, what is it that's going on? What do you want? How can we help? We don't want to take your life over, but we want you to feel secure and safe and loved, just like you made us feel when we were little.
As I hear you put in perspective the reasons why aging parents might choose to keep the reality of their conditions a secret, and basically what I'm hearing you saying is that they are fighting for their lives as they know it. They're fighting for their freedom. They want to live as they have lived. Again, I would say that it puts certainly the audience in a different frame of mind, I think, in terms of really understanding why that is, because certainly I would suggest that there are folks who they get to their parents' home and they see that they're ill or that the house is in disrepair, might in fact react with anger. Why didn't you tell me? What's wrong with you? Why didn't you just call me?
Yes. And it's important to try to be gentle.
Okay.
And so what I urge on Pop Parents is when you're in the midst of confusion and you don't know how to deal with the person who raised you who's acting 6 years old, take a deep breath and really ask yourself, how old are they acting? And try and adopt a relatively commensurate, kind perspective on how you would treat someone like that. Probably your parents are afraid. They're afraid you're going to come in their house and say, this is horrible. My parents, when I got to New York City, they told me not to come to their house. They didn't want me to come there. They didn't feel good.
Interesting. Was that a red flag for you?
I waited an entire day. They met me at a restaurant for dinner, and then they wouldn't let me come to their home. And the next day they had the same, don't come over. And I said, what are you talking about? And arrived at their front door, and my father said, for the first and only time in my life, he said, what are you doing here, Jane? I told you not to come.
Red flag time.
That's how crazy it feels when you're afraid that your children are going to take over your life, and you just need to be kind and say, Dad, I'm here for you. We're on the same team.
I'm not here against you. I'm not here to take away.
Oh, yes, exactly.
What is the website that you have been talking about, the pop
yes.
parenting site?
ParentingOurParents.org.
Okay.
So, as I said earlier, it's a building of community where you can ask your questions and get them answered by other people doing what you're doing. 1 in 4 families American-wide are doing this. They're not only experts out there who are lawyers and coaches and therapists, they're also experts who are daughters and sons and pop parents. So we want people to have a place to come and ask and get their questions answered. We also provide access to the book, which is a great help. So many people are saying, I wish I had this book. I'm so glad I have this book. Interestingly, a very large percentage of our sales apparently is senior parents who are buying 3 and 4 copies for their children.
Oh, that's interesting.
Don't know how to talk to their children? Buy the book. See how you can initiate the conversation. You're still the grown-ups here, folks.
Just
because we're over 65 doesn't mean we've ceded any of our maturity. Quite the opposite. We are even more wise and mature than we've ever been, but we may need a little help. So we have a community, we have a book, we have resources, and what's really unique is ParentingOurParents.org invites people to have access to coaches across the country who can meet with them as needed. Members of the family, often via Skype, can talk about and create plans. This is coaching like your kids need a basketball coach.
Sure.
Your children need to get into college. Your family, which doesn't have books, courses, magazines, will really benefit from the opportunity to talk to experts and each other and make a plan and then check it out and see how it's working and let it go and then have some family fun.
You know, as we're talking about this, and I'm thinking about those situations where whether or not the adult child brings the parent into the home or ascends to a facility, but there's in a lot of ways a tremendous loss that would be experienced, I would think, by the adult child, as well as the grandchildren, loss in terms of the way they used to see and respond and think about grandma and grandpa and who
yes.
they are seeing now. How does that show up in your experience, and what are some of your thoughts about how families can deal with that sense of loss?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and I think a lot of your listening audience is trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few points. One is many of us experience anticipatory loss, and that's partially what you're describing, is before people are gone from the planet and not able to talk to us anymore, they may be aging in such a way that it is difficult to communicate with them or to see them as we used to know them.
Right.
Well, you know, I think that much though I was speaking earlier on the cycle of life, I think this is a great time to teach our children and to integrate into our own thinking that our life, our human life, is a cycle, and we are mortal human beings. There's some great books out there. Maybe your audience knows Dr. Atul Gawande's book, Being Mortal.
Mm.
Excellent book about the stages of life. And life it should properly be experienced in its transitions and the beauty of that. And so when we are properly caring for our aging parents, they then can have a role much more akin to what grandparents used to have in other cultures and in other times when they were the historians of family lore. They were the keepers of recipes. they were the rememberers and sharers of how certain kinds of things were done in the family in a beautiful way.
So, again, it can be a full learning experience.
Exactly.
All righty. Jane, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, folks, we will continue with Jane Wolf Waterman. Jane Wolf Waterman, what I hear you saying with consistency is that there is a way to shift how the individual adult child thinks about being with their aging parents and, in effect, parenting their aging parent, shifting it so that it feels more like a potential gift, an opportunity to learn new things, to be curious in a different way, and thus see it not so much as a burden, but as an opportunity.
Yes, it's quite remarkable. I've been doing this work for a long time, Pamela, and I've yet to encounter an individual who says, gee, I'm sorry I did that. I wish I hadn't parented my parents. I know a lot of people who've made great, what others might consider, sacrifices. They have given up their own jobs, their own homes, their, quote, lives as they knew them, to care for their parents, to move in with their parents, to have their parents move in with them, or any variety of opportunities like that. And yet I've yet to hear somebody say, I wish I hadn't done that, because sacrifice, though it is, I don't hear too many parents saying, gosh, I'm sorry I paid for that schooling or that wonderful opportunity for my children. It is it's part of the beauty of our humanity. If we don't focus so much on the sort of negative side of the fact that we all do go through aging and there is loss, and we don't deny that we have these feelings. It's important, and it's valuable, I believe, sometimes, if you can do this, to express that to each other in the generation.
Mm-hmm. The adult child who lives far away from their parents and for whatever reason is not in a position to give up their homes or their positions and move in with parents, or parents move in with them, what do they do? I mean, this sort of parenting from afar, I mean, is difficult under the best of circumstances. What do you do if you're parenting your parent, so to speak, from afar?
Well, I encountered that after the first whirlwind of activities and getting them in and out of hospitals. And because I had work and patients and family back in California, I could not stay indefinitely in New York. And I hired someone called a geriatric care manager who had some staffing who could help clean their house, bring in some people who could take care of some deferred management and maintenance in the environment, and then people who could come caregive that I interviewed. That was many years ago, and since then, we have Skype and a lot of other things, which allows FaceTime and so forth, allows for a lot of observations of things, people, interviews, a lot of ways to really get good communication without actually being physically on site. And in fact, if you're in Los Angeles, it could take you a whole hour to get to my office sometime, and you might prefer to talk to me on Skype rather than spending an hour in the office and 2 hours to travel. But often that isn't sufficient, being at a distance. And then people have to decide what is it that they're willing and able to do in their families. Excuse me. So in my story, I had set to have my parents come out to Los Angeles and was looking at purchasing a home for myself because the home I lived in looked like a great one for them to move into. It was one story. It was in a walking neighborhood. It was near the ocean. So I thought this would be lovely for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, nope, we're not coming.
Then what do you do? Because, you know, as we're talking about parenting our parents, the other piece that comes up as I'm talking with you is how often parents will say to their children, don't try to be my parent. I'm not your child. And yet we're talking about parenting a parent. So, you know, there's got to be some pushback from the parents. And how do you deal with that?
Well, I guess that how you think about things really determines so much how you experience them, and that's part of what we're saying today.
Yeah.
If you feel it as a loss, I mean, if people are often saying, I lost my mother, well, that's very much how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd warrant their mother's still very much present and alive with them in so many times and places when they want her to be. And so separating out different things and calling things appropriate things, I found controversial, though calling it pop parenting may be, it's a way to have a conversation begin.
Okay.
What do you mean you're parenting me? Well, what I mean, Mom, and this is what my mother said when I told her, she said, and I was very frightened of telling her, Pamela, and all, was writing this book, and I thought, oh my God, she's going to say, I knew you, I diapered you.
Exactly.
How are you calling this? And you know what my mom said? She said, parents take good care of their children. If you're parenting me, I know you're going to do a good job for me.
That's delightful.
It was exactly what she said. And I think we want to come in at the angle that we're not taking over their lives.
Okay.
We're sharing it with them. And you know, give people some room to say, you know, I could use a little help. You know, I really don't enjoy driving very much anymore. You think you could take me to the market?
Well, speaking of driving, I mean, there's often, I mean, that's one of the last sort of bastions of freedom. And when you start to talk to your parents about not driving anymore, maybe taking away the license or the car keys, that can be a pretty dicey time in the adult-child-parent relationship. Do you have any guidance there, or is that something that someone can go to parentingyourparent.org and get some information about?
Yes, and just to be precise, it's parentingourparents.org.
Thank you.
So that people don't get lost on the way.
Thank you.
Yes, so that's a real challenge. In fact, I have an article on the website about that. But in a consistent fashion with how we look at this, the essence of my article says many parents actually want to give up their car keys. AAA and other places have tests you can give your parents so you know if they're driving well or not. And they know if they're driving well or not without actually being on the road to test that. But if it's all about loss, if it's all about giving up the car keys, if it's all about losing their independence, if it's all about not being able to go to a Mahjong game or whatever, canasta or whatever games people love to go to, bingo on Tuesday afternoons, then what you do is you don't take those things away. You, as pop parents, you go in there and you drive your parents to the supermarket as well as watching and making sure they're getting good nutritious food,
okay.
carrying the food back in the house for them, putting it back in the refrigerator. These are very burdensome tasks if you have a bad shoulder or you're not feeling very well,
sure.
or you've got a little dementia going on. These are very challenging things. If your parents love their Tuesday afternoon bingo game, you find a way to have, there are all kinds of senior driving opportunities. Set yourself, if you can't drive them, to have somebody drive them to that. And very much I want to urge people, go with your parents to their doctor's appointments.
Why is that so important?
Well, many, many reasons. Aging people are not good reporters of their own condition.
Okay.
They don't always remember. They don't like to talk about it. They don't want to complain. They don't know what's normal. There's so many reasons, and they just, I have been sitting in so many interviews where having the younger pop parent there saying, you know, Mom, remember when you had that situation? You were in the hospital just 2 weeks ago. Oh, that was nothing. I was just in the ER for a few minutes.
Yeah.
So, first of all, you can provide good input. Secondly, you can ask good questions. Third, you can have a good memory, including recording and taping, putting on your iPhone, your Samsonite phone, whatever phone you have, all the instructions and information, and sharing that in a coaching session with your siblings so everybody gets informed. Medicare doctors who are now seeing patients with two or more of the elderly diseases are paid to spend time with family as an overseeing doctor. They will give you more time.
Interesting.
If you come in with your middle-aged children and they get their questions answered, and then you have unfiltered information. I also urge people to have free information flows back and forth so that there isn't HIPAA and other privacy restrictions.
Right.
And absolutely, no matter what age you are, Pamela, I urge people to have powers of attorney, healthcare things. A 20-year-old can get hit by a car and need somebody
That's
else
true.
To make decisions.
That's so true.
Those are many, many reasons, but our health is so critical as we age. So if you want all the best of what you're getting from a doctor, take your parents to the doctor.
Is there a list, perhaps, on your site of the kinds of paperwork that the adult child should have in order for or with their parent?
The book has many such lists.
Okay.
There, each section of the stage of the pop cycle that I go through and people go through has pop plans and resources.
Okay.
And some of those plans are about, you know, what kinds of paperwork, what kinds of professionals to go to. And some of them are things like, how do you get more patients?
Hmm.
Because I'm telling you, part of why I named this Parenting, Our Parents, was because it was by remembering parenting children that I began to have the patience for my parents. That when I first saw them getting older, Pamela, I was angry at them. I didn't want them to get older.
So you were angry with them for getting older.
Yep.
And you know, and certainly I know how often that is part of the equation, and the adult child may be horrified to even think that they could go there, but that's a very natural, normal reaction.
Absolutely. You don't want them to be who they be, not who they were for you and your own children, and you get scared for your own aging, you get scared for what does that mean I will have to do or won't have to do. Again, I think of it as a choice. So initially, you know, when it takes your parents 10 minutes to get into the back of a car to go out to dinner, one can be very impatient.
Mm.
But when one remembers it, how great it was when it only took you 10 minutes to lasso up your kids in the car seat.
You were delighted.
Or when they would scurry in and it only take 4 minutes. And you're so delighted. So I think we need to build skills like patience. And that is something else the book offers and the coaches help people with, is how in parenting our parents we can really develop things come off of our original mm-hmm. good parenting. Most of us get to be better parents in our 40s and 50s and 60s than we might have been in our 20s.
Jane, we're going to take one last break, but when we come back, I'd like to pick up with some of the potential signs that would indicate to an adult child that they might need to really begin to pay attention to their parent in a different way.
Sure.
Folks, this is Dr. Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk, and you're joining us on Transitions Tuesday. Stay right where you are. And we're back, continuing our Transitions Tuesday conversation. Jane, what are the signs, what are some of the signs that would indicate that mom or dad is starting to need help in a different way?
That's a very good question, and it is part of the challenge that your audience is maybe experiencing, because as we were talking earlier, parenting children and parenting our aging parents is very different, because there are norms with growing up children. You know how tall a 3-year-old should be and how much they should weigh within a certain boundaries, and whether they should be playing with other children or not. There are no good norms of how someone should be when they're 73, 83, 93 even. Mm. So it's more challenging for people to know what to look for. And so I urge people to look and listen, perhaps in the way you did when you were parenting your teenagers, and you were kind of looking and smelling around and paying attention and what's going on with them. And so certainly forgetfulness is one of the keys.
Okay.
I say look and listen in places like open the refrigerator. Look at when you're visiting. Look at their food. Is it dated? Is it old? Is it moldy? Go in the medicine chest. Look at what they're taking by medications. Do they have a lot of things in there that they're no longer prescribed, or that are beyond their limitations, expiration-wise, or mm-hmm. something that you think might be dangerous for them to have around? Sometimes people get homebound. They get depressed. They wear the same clothes every day. They begin to smell badly, particularly when you notice changes. If your parents were always people who liked to stay home and really enjoyed themselves at home, the fact that they're homebound now may not mean anything.
Right.
And quitting activities that people enjoy. Some of the things that you and I might also look for when we see depressed people in our offices, some of those are some of the things to look and listen for. And again, ask kindly. It's part of this sort of thinking of your parents as people who need a kind of gentler nudge every once in a while, rather than a isn't it time to take your so-and-so medication?
Right.
You know, there's so many nice, wonderful ways that you might like your parents to have treated you. And isn't it possible you can turn around and treat them this way after you've had the perception, as you've just suggested, that maybe they are a little needy. Maybe it is time for you to help out.
Are there any particular significant danger signs that you would suggest to folks means you really need to, if at all possible, either drop what you're doing and go see your parents or get someone in there to take a look at what's happening?
I think that what sometimes happens that becomes a danger sign is a physical illness of some kind. As the heat here in Southern California has been quite extraordinary and very muggy for us, often in times of extreme weather, older people get sick. You read about senior homes where the
sure.
air conditioning went
mm-hmm.
down. So that's a time to be particularly noticing. Again, on holidays, people are often depressed. You might make a particular effort to reach out to people. And I very much want to encourage people to set their parents up, even on phones or computers. One can get a webcam for $30
mm-hmm.
and be able to interact on Skype for very little money and look at your parents, see their faces. Is there a significant weight loss? When you talk to them on the phone, if you're at a distance, are there long pauses in conversation? If they always love talking to you about what's going on with those candidates for president,
right,
and they don't care, that might be a time to get more information. And there are lots of other sources of information. It might be your siblings who live close can go visit.
Okay.
You might know your neighbors, your parents' neighbors, if your parents have lived in their home for many years. You may know your parents' pastor at the church, or rabbi, or whomever, who will make a visit. I encourage people to begin to think about community, and again, to kind of pay attention, look and listen, and not in an intrusive way,
mm-hmm.
but in the same way we do with our children, in a loving, caring, securing way.
Well, it sounds like in the same way that we would want to be done with us.
That is really an awful lot of the golden rule of all of this.
And yeah.
The circle of life, whatever we want to call it, it seems to keep presenting us with something really rather wonderful. If we don't let ourselves get hopeless, if we don't let ourselves get too alone, there is
mm-hmm.
community, there are other people. Please come to parentingourparents.org. Sign up, participate. Brag about your parents. Show us having your 65-year-old father doing the push-ups. Share the good stuff. Share the challenges. Get a coach just to get some help. Get a plan together. Get your family talking. Become part of something where you get to learn and teach, because we are all becoming experts. And as you said earlier, Pamela, none of us getting any younger. We're all going to need some help sooner or later. So let's be the one to play it forward.
Let me ask you this about the children, the grandchildren. Certainly,
yeah.
If there are older grandchildren, you know, there's a different way that a parent would talk to their child about grandma or grandma and the changes. But for that young child, perhaps under 5 years old or under 7 years old, what is there any guidance that you would share to parents of the younger children in terms of, you know, how to explain the changes that they're seeing in grandma and grandpa?
Well, one needs, of course, to be age appropriate.
Yes.
and one needs to be considerate of various people's cultures. So some people believe in various things post-mortem, as they say, and other people do not. But I think that showing very young children nature, I'm looking at a beautiful flower at the moment, and it spent its days budding and opening and spreading beautiful beauty and odor in the room, and it will curl up and fall off. And children understand that. And I think one doesn't need to be too explicit about the sad times. I also think it really helps to share with children videos that we make of our aging parents.
Okay.
Having them journal their lives for the coming generations. You and I are both social workers. You know, telling the life story is such an important part of a satisfying aging experience.
Indeed.
So if you can stick your phone in front of your, and maybe a good light, in front of your aging parents, that may be something that in some way is appropriate to share, or portions of it, with young children, you know, that grandpa was in this wonderful farm that built houses for people who, you know, whatever, you know.
Whatever it is, yeah.
That they did, you know, or grandpa, you know, wrote this beautiful song that Frank Sinatra sang, which would be something I would tell mine, you know. So I urge people to find a way to make the natural life that we're living natural. And that's really what our message is it's a cycle. Life is a cycle. Enjoy every day of it. There are challenges. We're not trying to be goody-two-shoes. It's hard to parent our aging parents. It's hard to have to go in and split up people who might be physically fighting with each other in bed, like a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Yeah, that you is, know? It can be.
And they're your parents. What do you do?
Well,
you
Jane,
take a deep breath.
You take a deep breath, and maybe you check out parentingourparents.org. Jane Wolf Waterman, author of Oh My God, We're Parenting Our Parents, How to Transform This Remarkable Challenge into a Journey of Love. Thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk.
It's been my deep pleasure. You're a very wonderful interviewer. Thank you.
Thank you. And folks, thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. I'm Pamela Brewer, and you can get more information about Mind Talk by going to myndtalk.org. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace treatment with a licensed medical or mental health professional of your choosing. The managing producer is Jim Brown in 26x2 Communications. Again, for more information about Mind Talk, you are encouraged to go to myndtalk.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. There are lots of options. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. And always, always remember, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. Take care.